What's up, guys? Welcome back to West Coast Bias, Season 5, Episode 3. Today we're going to be discussing, for the first time in months, actual sports. We kind of rounded a corner this week in terms of a few different sports, actually, but today we're going to be talking about the NBA and the recent discussions. It seems to have narrowed down the potential for playoffs, or concluding the regular season and playoffs potentially. It seems like it's going to happen middle to late July, most likely at Disney World. We're going to discuss the three possibilities that have been floated around, and kind of discuss the different permutations of each, and who would it benefit the most, and who would harm each situation harm the most. So let's start with the World Cup group format type, soccer format, which has received a lot of buzz in the last few days since it seems to be gaining some real traction. Just off the top, do you think this is the best way to go about it, or do you think one of the other ones is?
So I hear a lot of people here have shame, and they think that there needs to be some sort of realistic standard that this is all set to. Personally, I like this format because it pretty much cuts the line off at the Kings, and the reason it cuts the line off at the Kings is to cut the line off at Zion, and I'm more than fine with that. That sounds like a fun time to me. The most popular version of this format, which Adrian Wojnarowski first unveiled effectively yesterday, and again said today, was gaining steam as the most likely. Most likely version of this involved 20 teams. Effectively, the 16 playoff teams that were already in, and the four teams within reach of eighth in the West that were probably going to be one of those four, probably going to catch the Grizzlies, given the Grizzlies' remaining strength of schedule. I would have personally thought it would have been Sacramento had they played through, but if they had resumed the regular season after a stop, halting Sacramento's momentum, it was probably more likely to be New Orleans. But all five of those teams theoretically had a chance of being the eighth seed, and probably about an equal chance, really.
Right.
Since we were robbed of that, that's the argument the NBA is giving us for trying to give those teams a chance to play in. And instead of doing a four-game series to give any of those teams the opportunity to play into a bracket, whether that's a 1-16 bracket or an East-West bracket, is replacing the first round of the playoffs with a five-team group stage where two teams from each group advance to basically an unseeded or reseeded 18 playoff that would have the traditional conference semifinals, conference finals, finals format, but be unsorted by conference. This is my personal favorite just because it gets the Kings in. I won't, no shame about this. But it's also the most interesting and most novel way to solve their big problem of effectively not having an opportunity for these teams to warm up before best of seven series starts. This creates something of a replication of the regular season while still sorting down the teams into playoff level contenders. With eight games, two matchups for each possible in these groups, it is providing all of these teams with more games before they matter. And realistically, the first three of these will probably be sloppy, so the fact that we're doing two instead of one makes the results a little less meaningful game by game, because you really can't do a single elimination. I think it solves the most problems and creates the most interesting scenario, so this is what I want.
Yeah, I think there's three things that really stand out to me about this. One thing you just mentioned, whereas in soccer, the World Cup, they do each team only gets to play one of the other team once. And there's only four teams in the group instead of five. Is there? Yeah, there's five teams, and there'd be five teams in these groups because four groups of five. Is that how it is? So it's more like a Champions League format where each team plays each other twice, which I think, while yes, it takes away from the single elimination, I think it makes a lot more sense in terms of preserving the regular season. Which is kind of moves me into the next point I think I'd have, which even though it's seems like the weirdest one, I think it does the best job at preserving the regular season, and kind of the records of the regular season's teams, the good teams, as much as possible, whereas a play-in tournament would have kind of inordinately harmed the seventh and eighth seeds, and helped out the Blazers, Kings of the world. So I think this does the best job at kind of combining those two. But yeah, I mean, I like it. I think it's a good idea, and I guess let's move into if the groups were seeded, just the different ways they could seed this, I guess, which is the real sticking point, I think, for why this could not happen, would be the difficulties in ensuring that the top seeds have the advantage they deserve, and that, you know, we try to avoid the potential group of death situations that we see, you know, every single year in soccer, where there's one group that's really stacked and one group that's, you know, pretty weak, just by right. statistics in season. So if you have you've written out, you've mapped out if we took the best possible team from each one of these pods or each one of these tiers that we have, what would that group look like? Just the best group. What would the best and worst group look like if that's how we were doing things? Just by record.
So this is rather than randomized drawing, which seems like the most likely situation, set by tiers, or my personal favorite, which is the tier one teams drafting their opponents for each round in a classic AFE style snake draft, or whatever podcast has sold in that format in the past 3 months. I think that this is the most interesting way to do it, and the randomization is probably the most fair. But since we can't assume the result of either of those, the only thing we really have to work with is either a snake seeding, which is one gets 8 and 9 in its group and then gets 16-17, or a 1-5-9 seeding, which is one gets 5, 9, 13, and 17 in its group, set effectively the first in every tier, second, third, and fourth in every tier. This is probably the least popular way to do this because it forces the number one seed to have to be contending with both the 5 and the 9 and actually gives a disadvantage by record. But this is the way that leads to the most obvious analysis, so we're going to go with this. The group one in this situation is 1-5-9-13-17 as written, which is Bucks, Celtics, Thunder, Mavs, and Blazers. Group two is Lakers, Nuggets, Rockets, Grizzlies, and Pelicans. Group three is Raptors, Jazz, Sixers, Nets, and Kings. And group four is Clippers, Heat, Pacers, Magic, and Spurs. So no matter what you're looking at here, there's going to be some real landmines in tiers 3 and 4, because of the way they're seeded, right? First of all, tier 4 is the Mavericks, and the Mavericks are a good team, and the Grizzlies, Nets, and Magic are not good teams. It also has the Nets in it, which are a team that did not have Kevin Durant before and would have Kevin Durant then, presumably. But the bigger issue, I think, is going to be the Thunder, Rockets, and Sixers in tier 3, which are three very good teams with very different strengths that you would all want to avoid for different reasons. And then the Pacers, which I think most people would want to play. And then, of course, tier 2, you get the lucky draws with the Jazz and the Heat and the more unlucky Celtics and Nuggets. I think all 4 teams from tier 1 are people you want to avoid, but the Raptors probably least. So from the list we're given with this in mind, I think group 4 is pretty clearly the one you want to be in. Clippers, Heat, Pacers, Magic, and Spurs. Sounds to me like there's a spot up for grab behind the Clippers for any of those 4 teams. Probably least likely the Spurs, but any of the 4 could get it. Whereas the group you by far least want to be in would be Lakers, Nuggets, Rockets, Grizzlies, and Pelicans, which is group 2. I think that's harder than Bucks, Celtics, Thunder, Mavericks, Blazers, just because you have to deal with the Pelicans, Rockets, and Nuggets all being teams that have had incredible hot streaks over the course of the year, and the Lakers being the comfortable number one in the West.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing that jumps out at me just from this is that there's some kind of seeding strain, just the way the records played out and the way the regular season played out, with specifically in reference to the Raptors, the Heat, and the Thunder, I suppose, would be the other team that overachieved. You really have a situation where seeding it like that, which would appear, you know, just on paper, it would make sense that would be the least fair way to do it, because you'd be stacking the groups, actually doesn't really end up that way, with the exception of that fourth group you've mentioned. But I'd say the first two groups are pretty even. And then the third group isn't too far off, especially if you know, Durant came back and Kyrie was healthy and all that kind of stuff. And then the fourth group is pretty clearly the easiest, but it also has the Clippers in it, and the Heat, and, you know, is it the Clippers? Yeah. So, you know, it's not quite as uneven as it could be. I think just if I had thought how that was going to go, just based on, you know, how I rank teams in my head versus by how the records are currently in the regular season, I don't think it's quite as uneven. But I think you're right. I think the best way to do it would actually be a draft, because that would do the best job at rewarding the teams. It would be the most entertaining. It would set up some super fun, you know, potential matchups, some upsets. There's not going to be a way where there's not going to be one group that thinks that they're in the most difficult group and where fans think it's the most difficult group. But I think the draft is the best, and I think the snake or random is probably the most likely. But either way, I think it's an interesting thing. So If you had to pick the hardest group, would it be that second group that you mentioned, or would it be some different, a different combination?
So the hardest group you could create here, I think, looks something like Bucks have to be number one. Bucks, Celtics, Rockets, Mavericks, and Pelicans is probably the toughest you could build. I think the weakest you could build is something like Raptors, Heat, Pacers, Magic, Spurs, though there's a real argument that the Jazz is the two seed there. Either way, I think the number one and number two teams that you're just deeply not afraid of here are the Magic and the Spurs. The Spurs have not played at a high level for any stretch of the season, and the Magic simply are not an exciting or interesting team on any level. That pretty much is only true of those two teams this season. All the other teams on this list have had at least one stretch where they've won 8 of 10, I believe, and have looked something sort of inspiring. Even the Nets at one point have looked decent. And all of those other teams that are not particularly good right now on this list, specifically the Blazers, Grizzlies, Kings, Nets, all get players back from injury and have the opportunity to have a training camp before this to get those players back into the lineup. The Blazers obviously get their entire starting front court back. The Grizzlies get a Brandon Clark back and get Jaren Jackson fully healthy. The Nets get Kevin Durant back. And the Kings get Marvin Bagley back, even though he's only played, I think, 15 games this season. So that's all of those teams will have the opportunity to integrate those high-level players into their systems. And obviously, there's a very big difference between a Brandon Clark or a Marvin Bagley, who's a young player who's contributed for a stretch of his career, or a Kevin Durant, who's a first-ballot Hall of Famer and MVP of the league. But all of those things are immediately changing the composition of the team in some direction. And the Spurs simply don't have that player. They have the chance to get their two point guards working together in a way they haven't, because one was hurt during training camp. But that's not the same as getting back to Kevin Durant. And the Magic are not, I believe, getting back Jonathan Isaac, who is their best player that they've been missing for the course of the season anyway.
Yeah. The only thing I would change about that, I would put the Lakers pretty clearly above the Bucks right now in terms of title favorites, just in my eyes. But for the group stage, I'm not sure it really matters. I'd say they're pretty much identical. Both of them should win all their games just in a playoff format. Both of those teams should be winning. I think I would seed the Lakers first out of teams I did not want to see in that in any kind of playoff format. But then, yeah, I think the Jazz and the Heat are pretty close together, but the Jazz, despite having probably a worse regular season, are probably better suited to the playoffs just with all the talent they have and experience with Mike Conley and Bogdanovich and Joe Ingles and Mitchell coming back again, who's looked good in the playoffs before.
Although Bogdanovich is hurt.
Is he still going to be hurt?
I believe so. I will tell you right now.
Yeah, I'm losing track of... I wasn't even sure if KD would officially be back.
Season-ending surgery on March, okay. On May 18th.
Oh, that's right. That was pretty recent, wasn't it? So that's true. They're not quite as deep as that. I'd say the Heat and the Heat and the Jazz are the two you'd want to have out of that second tier. I don't think you want to see the Celtics at all, certainly. And then the Nuggets. That third tier...
feels like a ripe opportunity for Jason Tatum to murder some people.
Yeah, it should be a real interesting... Yeah, Jason Tatum just kind of 8-game period or whatever where we just see a lot of Jason Tatum. I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. And then tier three is just such an interesting tier because you have... Obviously, the Thunder, who've massively overachieved, the Pacers, who've kind of just been the Pacers all year, despite not having Oladipo, and they've been really impressive, but are still probably pretty clearly the worst team in that in that tier. But then you have the Sixers and the Rockets, who are just these completely insanely talented, but completely totally dysfunctional teams.
They're uniquely designed by design, and that's kind of their flaw. But they also have championship level rosters, right? That's the issue.
The Sixers could easily make a run, which is why, I think we both would have the Sixers in the group of death if we were doing that. But my group would then be the Lakers, Celtics, Sixers, Mavericks, and I would probably say the Blazers. But I would hear arguments for the Pelicans as well in that.
That Pelicans team is very overrated as an actual team, but. Just its summation of talent is too scary to not have it as the number one in tier five.
I guess if I was playing, I'm trying not to be a homer here, but if I was a playoff team, I would not want to see a healthier Blazer team than the one that made the Western Conference Finals last year. That would be my argument for the Blazers. But the Pelicans would be a close second. But at the same time, I'm not really scared of the Pelicans in the playoff. I don't think Zion's quite there yet. He's great. He's been better than I certainly expected him to be. But I don't. I would feel pretty confident in a series if I was one of those other higher ranking teams. If I was to pick one team I was scared against. Yeah, and I think we went over the worst. I think I agree with that. I think, yeah, the Kings over the Spurs is probably the right call there just because the Spurs have been so bad this year.
Yeah, the Kings have been significantly better than the Spurs all year. I don't believe they've been behind the Spurs.
I would definitely rank the Kings ahead of the Spurs. I think the Spurs are done, but even in they were pretty much done last year, and they managed to take the Nuggets to 7 and probably should have won that series. So you never know. You never know. I would probably still rather face, and I think it depends on who you are, really. It's really matchup driven NBA anyway, so it's not, which is why these arguments, whereas in soccer it's usually there's a pretty clear cut, you know, ranking of teams that are clearly better than one another, have better players. But in the NBA, a lot of it's matchup driven, which makes a completely different idea for this kind of setup,
right? Which is why I'm personally much more scared of the Bucks than you're much more scared of the Lakers than I am of them. Because the thing about the Bucks is, this is the thing that I always come back to, is what position besides small forward are the Lakers better than the Bucks at?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think my attitude, which I certainly didn't have at the beginning of the year, is just that I don't think that, and I think a lot of people probably share at this point, I don't think it's a revolutionary idea, but I just don't see a situation in which anybody stops LeBron and Anthony Davis in the playoffs. And Giannis still isn't at the level where he can take over a game because he still can't shoot well enough. And he may get there next year, he may get there 2 years from now, but I don't see a situation in which that Bucks team, I hope I'm wrong about this, but I just don't see a situation in which that Bucks team can beat the Lakers, even though, yes, I think they're better at almost every other position. But the Lakers still do have, you know, the Danny Greens of the world, who can play. They have, you know, rejuvenated some other players. I don't know if that's going to be the case. I'd love to see that series, but right now I'd pick the Lakers in a 7-game series over the Bucks.
The Lakers have 2 proven playoff players. I guess Dwight Howard was at one point a proven playoff player, but who he is today is no longer relevant. No. They're going to be playing AD at center for all of those games anyway. They're not going to be playing JaVale any minutes. Dwight's going to be playing backup center, not center with AD at power forward anyway. So that entire advantage is thrown out effectively because it's not going to work in a playoff bubble anyway. The Lakers are going to be playing with Danny Green having not really had a great season. LeBron obviously has been incredible. He's obviously the second best player in the league. I think we'd all agree he finished second in MVP voting. And the bigger issue I have with that team is all those other role players they have are guys who have never once contributed at a playoff level as in the role they're in. Rondo and Dwight Howard obviously were different people at different points in their career, but Alex Caruso is probably their fifth best player, and nobody's seen Alex Caruso in a game that matters. You have a guy in Avery Bradley who's been bad more recently than he's been good. He's had a pretty strong stretch to end the season.
Yeah, he's still Avery Bradley.
And you can't assume they're going to give JaVale minutes because he's JaVale and they shouldn't give him minutes. And who does that really leave you with? Kyle Kuzma probably won't get playoff minutes from that either. I see a 7-8 player deep team with really only 2 superstars, and one of those is Anthony Davis, who has won 1 series in his career.
I think that's true. I think that's true. But also, I think the Bucks get away with having, just because they've performed much better as a team, they have, you know, they rely heavily on Dante DiVincenzo and Pat Connaughton off the bench.
But Dante DiVincenzo and Pat Connaughton had good playoff. Well, Pat Connaughton had a good playoffs last year. Dante DiVincenzo,
they were okay. They were not important players on a team that still underachieved last year. I wouldn't say that they were. You know, I'd say they're just less controversial than the Lakers. They're like those Lakers players. That's what I would say. Is that
here's the thing: is the Lakers, those you're talking about guys that are 8 and 9 for them. The Lakers have these guys, but they don't have a George Hill. They do not have a. They certainly don't have either Lopez brother. Both Lopez brothers are better than.
That's true. I do have another Lopez brother.
They don't have, and I know it's we're matching them up and saying that it's equal between the 2 stars because of how far Giannis is ahead of LeBron, but I really, really, really think that we're underrating the contribution they're getting from the small forward position. They have an all-NBA small forward. I think he's probably going to be second team. And just because he isn't exciting or interesting, nobody cares. He's a boring player.
Nobody loves Chris Middleton more than I do. I they really struggled last year. And until they show it, I can't in good conscience or good faith put them, you know, in any kind of favorable position against a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, especially when the pace slows down, and that's when those two are really going to be good. And the Bucks are a team that like to run and like to get out in the open court, and it favors Giannis because he can't shoot still. The rest of the team can very much, are amazing shooters, almost down to the 10th or 11th guys, and probably including Robin Lopez even right now. I guess I don't think there's a big difference. It's just those two, I think, make a big difference in a projection-based series, is what I would say.
And if the Lakers can somehow run Anthony Davis at 4 and a traditional center at 5, which is presumably Dwight Howard, at a playoff level, the only team that can actually counter that, if that's somehow a working strategy, is the Bucks, because the Bucks can play Giannis all the way down to 3 and the Lopez brothers together if they need to, or they could play Giannis all the way up to 5 with Chris Middleton 4 if they need to. That is a versatility that, with no Draymond Green to be found in this playoffs, that's unmatched.
Well, a healthy Sixers maybe will do something close.
Well, the healthy Sixers can't really get too much smaller than they can. You can have Al Horford in the starting lineup or not, but it really hasn't worked with Al in the starting lineup, right? Yeah. He's coming off the bench, and their theoretical starting lineup is one with a power forward, guy who can defend power forward, starting at point guard, sure, but you're still talking about a lineup where it's after Embiid, you're going down to potentially a rookie wing at your 4, and if you have Ben Simmons defending that position, then he's defending at 3, and that's a great defensive talent on that team, but you're still asking for big contributions from basically a one-direction rookie whose three-point shot's still developing in the Bible.
So I guess my next question would be, who out of the Blazers, Grizzlies, the teams that you mentioned earlier, the Blazers, Grizzlies, Kings, and let's keep those just because they're the lower seeds. Who benefits the most from this type of proposal, would you say? Based taking into account injuries, playoff, you know, potential matchups, that kind of thing.
So the Spurs benefit the most because the Spurs were the team that would not have really been in any sort of playoff contention with their schedule. The Grizzlies benefit the least because they're the team that would have been knocked out of the playoffs if they win a full regular season and would have stayed in if we did nothing at all. So that really leaves the most benefit for actually continuing on to the next level for the Pelicans, because they're the ones that everybody knows the talent of. They're the ones that the NBA wants to progress, and they're the ones that have the potential with a second training camp to suddenly come out on fire. We saw it for a quick stretch when Zion first came in with the team, that they've really cooled down since in the last 10 games. But they had a 10-game stretch where Brandon Ingram was playing at an incredible level. Zion was playing at the level we now expect Zion to play at. And Drew Holiday was healthy and playing at a high level. And are we going to be able to see that again? Are we going to see something better? They still have Derek Favors and J.J. Redick as the 4 and 5 in that theoretical starting lineup. And that's 5 solid playoff-level contributors in theory. So can they maybe be one of the teams that advances out of a group? They're probably more likely than the other 5 seeds for sure.
Yeah. I'm going to have to be a little bit of a homer right now. I think if the Pelicans get more respect than the Blazers out of those teams, I'm going to be a little mad. I'm not really going to care because I think that they are a better team. I think the issue with the Blazers is that the two guys they're bringing back are both big guys, and that's going to be much harder to reintegrate into a team just because of the way they play and the speed and size that, you know, they're going to have to get up to in a much faster way without much of a training camp. So I'd say that would be the knock against it. I'd say the pro for the Blazers is, again, they made the Western Conference Finals on no other, with nobody else on the team. They're the only team out of that group of teams that has any kind of success in any kind of playoff series. And they have by far the best player out of those 4 teams. So that would be my argument for the Blazers. Refute it.
Well, the Blazers are the team that's actually done something in the playoffs. Of all these teams, they're the only ones that have. The Spurs, last time they did something in the playoffs besides take a team to 7, they had Tim Duncan on the roster. The Kings, last time they did something in the playoffs was 2006. Literally, the Grizzlies, last time they were in the playoffs, Zach Randolph was on the roster. And the Pelicans, last time they were in the playoffs, were a team centered around Anthony Davis, right? So they are the only team here with any sort of continuation and talent. And we're not even going to consider for a second that the Mavericks are part of this tier because they're so clearly better and their expectations are so clearly higher. They're much more comparable to the Nuggets last year than they are to, say, the Grizzlies this year.
I think that's a good point, but I also think it's important to note that Dwight Powell, I believe, is out for the season. He was a really huge part of their team.
He's been out for a while, and they are going to be playing Kristaps Porzingis at center in the playoffs anyway.
I think that's true, but I think it's still an underrated loss for them. And I wouldn't put them quite as far away from this tier as they've certainly been better. I think they are certainly better, but
it's not so much that the rest of the roster is better. The difference is that they have an MVP caliber guy, and Dame Lillard can be that, but he has been playing on and off hurt all season, and he missed a long stretch right before this too. Obviously he's been months off, he's got training camp before, but Luka was playing at that level all season. Luka was a top five guy this season, and Dame was probably closer to that tier than anybody else within the first literally bottom 12 teams here, but still they don't have that guy, and the Mavs do. Even the Rockets didn't have that guy this season. James Harden fell off a cliff in February and March.
I mean, and I'll still take Dame over Luka in any playoff series right now, and it's not really close. He had a stretch right before he got hurt where he averaged 50 points a game for 10 games. I mean, I love Luka. I think he's awesome. I think he's eventually going to be better than Lillard. I don't think he is right now. I don't.
Okay. So, I mean, I think that's an acceptable answer. I think that's very debatable. It's going to be interesting to see those top 100 lists come out next year and have Luka probably everywhere from 30th to 5th would be my guess is where he's going to look.
I mean, I think Luka should be top 10 right now, just to be clear. But
here's the thing with that. Just as good as Luka is a guy who also from the former Socialist Republic of Yugoslavia, who is also tall and unusually good at passing for his position. And absolutely nobody cares about Nikola Jokic. He is never in top 10. He's barely considered the best center, and he is so clearly excellent at everything except for perimeter defense. So I'm not sure. I think Luka might get Modokin more respect just because he's a wing and he's a flashy wing. I'm not sure he's going to deserve the rankings he's going to get, but I think he's also going to be underrated because he's so young. Anyway, all of this is to say that the Kings could have had him next to De'Aaron Fox and not have to worry about any play-ins right now because they'd be a 4 seed.
So,
but they didn't.
Here we are. Let's transition to the Kings. I've given my thoughts on the Blazers. What are your thoughts on the Kings should this play out? What do you think their chances would be if they got... say they got one of the easier groups. Do you think they'd have a good chance at, say they got the Raptors, the Heat, the Pacers, and the Magic? Do you think, what percentage of a chance would you give them to make it out of that group? It's the top, is it the top two?
Top two, right now. It might change, but it's top two. So they have a major problem that is going under discussed and a minor problem that nobody cares enough about to discuss. The major problem is that the reason they were so good the last month and a half is that De'Aaron Fox was playing at a superstar level. I mean, a true top 5 point guard in the West, which is top 7 point guard in the league, superstar level. And he has been hurt, and he'd been playing hurt while he was playing at that level. And he's had 3 months off and is saying that he does not feel any better. He has a lingering shoulder issue that he would have had to get fixed in an offseason surgery that he hasn't been able to fix because of the intermittent time off and elective surgeries being unavailable. So that creates a big issue for them. What if De'Aaron Fox doesn't come back at that level? Their minor problem is that behind De'Aaron Fox, they have 5 starter caliber guys who can all mix and match and 6 rotation level guys that fit behind them. All of that depth becomes an issue when you're playing 7-8 deep in the playoffs, right? Are you even playing Marvin Bagley? Are you even playing Harry Giles or Alex Len? How many minutes can you realistically give a Kent Bazemore who's 34 years old or 32 years old, I guess? How many minutes can you realistically give a Nemanja Bjelica, who's too slow to defend, wings at the playoff level? So what if you're talking about a situation where Bjelica is no longer in your rotation, I think they actually will not have an issue with Rashawn Holmes defending on the perimeter whatsoever. That's one of his better strengths, is that he's a pick-and-roll player who can defend the perimeter. So if you're giving Marvin Bagley 14 minutes a game as a backup center, Rashawn Holmes 36 as a starting center, maybe 4 minutes of overlap with him to actually try those lineups out, you take Bjelica out, you move Barnes to 4, and you start Bazemore at 3, do you really trust Harrison Barnes and Kent Bazemore to be your starting front court as a playoff team? How is that going to work out? And what are you going to do about the fact that Corey Joseph can't produce his own offense if Bazemore's not next to him? You're going to have a lot of minutes if De'Aaron Fox isn't on the floor where they can't really produce offense, and a lot more things that are solvable. They have one player who's above being solved, maybe two if Rashawn Holmes is, I think he's very underrated at what he does in a very similar way to what the Clippers have in Montrezl Harrell, but he's much better defensively. If Fox and Holmes are your only players that aren't schemable, what are you going to do if Bogdanovich is getting crapped every time he touches the ball? What are you going to do if a team forces Buddy Hield to be a ball handler and he's still just not capable of that? I don't know if this is necessarily a team that's well equipped for the playoffs yet, and if they're going to play 8 playoff-type games, I don't know if it's going to look well for them. But they have the opportunity for De'Aaron Fox to finally be a superstar on a world stage and take some games over the way Damian Lillard would. And that's what I want to see, and that's why I'm excited to see them here. And if you put them against, say, a group with the Magic and the Pacers in it, and the third team is the Jazz or the Heat, I think they have a real chance of being that number two, making it out of group.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's just thinking about it in that context, can we make it to the number two? And that's how a lot of these soccer groups work, and that's why, I don't know, I think a lot of American sports fans may differ on the way soccer does stuff, but I think that's what one of the reasons why these big international soccer tournaments work so well is because, yeah, there's always a small chance that, you know, or a larger chance that that'll go chalk, but there's always, you know, a good chance that someone like an Iceland will slip in, and that's what makes it cool. While maintaining, or I would argue in the NBA's case, really increasing the competitiveness by eliminating those garbage first round series. You know, and then the last thing I would say on this is, and why it's my preferred sector, is that I don't like how playoff series, I don't like how NBA playoffs, and this is my problem with American playoffs in general, I don't like how it's really dependent, especially in basketball, on figuring out the other team over a course of seven straight games, because I don't think that really shows who the better team is, especially as we get later into the playoffs. I like the idea that you're going to have to play different teams, and some people might disagree with me on that, but I like the idea that you're going to have to figure out how to play against four different teams in order to get to the next round, at least to start out with.
It also makes coaching important in a very different way, because coaching for adjustments in a playoff series is what makes truly great NBA coaches great. The two that come to mind, that the reason I think they're great NBA coaches, are Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich. If you got to think about how many series where their Game 7 lineups look nothing like their Game 1 lineups. That's how Steve Kerr won in 2015, the first Warriors title. That's how Greg Popovich basically created Kawhi Leonard as a superstar overnight in the 2013 and 2014 finals, even though they only won one of those two in the end, thanks to Ray Allen. And that's what you're going to miss with this format, is you're not going to get to see teams develop like that until later on in series. But what you're going to get in this format is you're going to get what you're describing, which is a lot more less game-specific scheming and a lot more games that play like serious regular season games, rather than games that play like a playoff series games where nobody's trying to hide their stuff, right? Nobody's scheming for specific teams in the same way.
Yeah, and I would throw Rick Carlisle with some of those Mavs teams and the specifically the championship team, but also that the team that ended up losing to the Heat in 06.
There's an interesting contrast on the other side too, is that Brad Stevens is the best regular season and X's and O's coach in the league, and he has on multiple occasions gotten absolutely embarrassed in Game 7 of a series where in Game 1 his team looked amazing.
Right. And obviously, to be clear, you know, we're going to get both of these, which is why I think this is actually a good idea moving forward, not just in this, you know, emergency situation. I think it's a very...
I think we can go to four after this year, but I would agree that moving forward would be interesting.
And I think I'm not sure why I didn't hear anything about this kind of idea, except maybe not even in the context of an in-season tournament, which is probably where it should be used first if we're going to move there. I think just because it sounds the most different, but in reality is probably the easiest and most fair way of going about things. With that being said, the other main idea for potentially finishing out the season is a play-in between most likely 7, 8, 9, and 10, it seems like, or 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 with a two-round play-in.
It can't be 7, 8, 9, 10 in the West because 10's tied. That's simple.
Right.
And because the tiebreaker game for that was canceled by the league, even though it was New Orleans' choice at Sacramento, that would create some very, very deep political issues if they canceled it and put either of those.
Well, and it would also create it would be a huge disadvantage for those two teams that are already in the playoffs, because it would, generate a scenario where a healthy Blazers or a healthy Pelicans team.
Right. Memphis is going to get knocked out anyway. And even though they were well ahead, everybody assumes that Orlando and Brooklyn would make it out of any playoff situation because they're better teams.
And
they don't really have to start behind them.
And before we move on to the potential conditions for this play-in series, the reason why this group stage works, or any of these work, is because everyone agrees that the four West teams are the, it works by record as well, obviously, but everyone kind of agrees that those four West teams are clearly better than any teams that could get in the East, which is also borne out by record, but also happens to pass the eye test, I think, which is kind of an important element, because if you had, for instance, a really good Atlanta team that was only half a game back of the Spurs, that all of a sudden creates a real issue that we don't really have, because it's not tight. That cutoff line isn't tight,
And I can't possibly stress this enough. If you're ever somehow still relitigating Trae Young versus Luka Doncic, is that Luka Doncic's team had a record closer to the top of the West than the eighth in the West, and Trae Young's team was maybe the worst in basketball, and he was the main reason they were bad. He's a good basketball player who makes a team bad, and that is something you can fix, but it's not something you can ignore.
Right, and this play-in tournament, I suppose it would still be done by conferences, or would it be? It would have to be, I guess, which would, you know, then you'd get those two Eastern teams that you don't, or four Eastern teams that you don't want to see in there, which is really reason enough for not doing it, in my opinion. But it also just doesn't make sense. I just don't think it's a very good idea. I think it would benefit, it would probably benefit the Blazers immensely. But I don't think it's a good idea for the league.
Yeah, it's something that would be fun for me because I would get to see more of more national games with no other distractions for my team, whereas I'm sure they're going to be scheduled against other teams in this situation. But it seems unlikely and uninteresting.
Yeah. So I guess the other option, which is probably the worst, that seems to have been pretty much eliminated right now, is reducing the amount of regular season games but keeping all the other teams playing. And that was what Damian Lillard got very upset with a couple days ago, because it, you know, makes no sense at all. If you're going to bring all the teams back, you can't really shorten the amount of games to be played. But then by that same token, you can't only bring some of the teams back if you're going to finish a regular season, because, you know, the teams involved would have to play those lower teams just because that's the way the schedule is. So it seems like that's kind of a very low probability of that happening. And if it does happen, it really won't make any sense. And I think we could see more players kind of go that same route of what Lillard said the other day.
Right. I mean, think about it. If you're specifically Steph Curry, there's no possible chance you're coming back. And not even that. I mean, if you're anybody on any of these teams that aren't really contenders, if you're John Wall and you're theoretically recovered from that Achilles tear, and you think you'd be cleared to play, why would you possibly decide to return now instead of waiting until
the summer? Right. And it is interesting, though, because we've discussed briefly the injury, the comebacks, the ramifications of that. We haven't really officially heard from the Nets with regards to KD, I don't think, have we?
Interesting. This is the most interesting team for this, because right. One of the chief concerns for not coming back is potentially contracting the virus with lasting implications. And it's really the argument for the whole league not coming back, is we don't know what happens after you catch this virus. Kevin Durant's already been positive. Kevin Durant's already gone through the process.
Yeah.
That makes him more likely to come back than most other players if we do play this. I think there's a much more real chance that KD would play in this series, in whatever play-in or first-round series the Nets get, than there would have been otherwise because of this. And that actually plays to Brooklyn's advantage. And whether or not Kyrie comes with him, that would have more to do with just a guy not wanting to play for a mediocre team. But that's the really interesting potential here, is Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving get a training camp together to try to figure out what has been a hilariously underwhelming Brooklyn Nets team without KD. They are four games under 500, and no stretch of the season have they looked anything near good. If I had to guess, I would think they would have finished closer to 35 wins than 40. They were worse than the Nets were last year when they were led by D'Angelo Russell, even though they clearly upgraded talent at the point guard position. So what do they look like when you add a player that is not only better than Kyrie Irving, not only better than D'Angelo Russell, but better than everybody but the top two players in the league? I think we'd all have him third behind LeBron and Giannis if we were ranking again. So what happens when you add that guy to a bad team? Is that something that suddenly can upset a Toronto? Is that something that can suddenly get out of a group with both a, say, Milwaukee and a Denver in it?
I think it's certainly a team that could get out of a group. I don't think it's a team that wins a first-round series, which is why this is really interesting. You know, I think KD's one of those guys that he's going to, like, for instance, Yusuf Nurkic on the Blazers, he's not going to be good when he comes back. So saying that the Blazers are automatically going to be better, you know, be so much better just because they have Nurkic back, I don't think is true, even though I've probably said something similar to that already about 20 minutes ago. But Kevin Durant's going to come back. He's going to be fine. He doesn't have a lot of weight on him. His game is a lot of shooting, and, you know, it's just not – he may not be full KD, but he's going to come back and be pretty much 90% of what he was, I would guess. versus some some of these other guys that are coming back may not have that same impact on their teams. Aside from the fact that, as you said, he's, you know, the third best player in the league.
Here's the thing about a torn Achilles is, your torn Achilles, if you're a John Wall, could completely derail your entire career. We all think that contract's terrible because we all assume Wall will come back nowhere near where he was, and he was already a shadow of what he was at his peak. He's one of those players whose athleticism simply faded one day, and it's a torn Achilles is not going to help that. Kevin Durant, if he loses all of his athleticism, could still be a 7-foot-tall power forward that shoots threes at 42%, right? An immobile Kevin Durant can still defend the perimeter well enough to play four in the modern league, and he's got the size and all the possible inside abilities for it, right? He's still a guy who can play that position at an elite level. It's kind of like Larry Bird. When Larry Bird first started getting hurt and he pivoted more inside, it's still a functional potential career path for him. Yeah. And maybe that's something that takes more than a season to develop, more than an offseason to develop, but I'm not too worried about what KD looks like if he loses athleticism.
Well, I'd say out of all the injuries, I mean, we saw this a little bit ago with ACLs, but I think Achilles are kind of nearing that same level where the medical technology's not, you know, it's so much better than it was even like 5 years ago that people like KD that are able to keep themselves in shape and don't rely fully on their athleticism are able to come back and be 90% of what they were, whereas I'd say the, you know, rate in the past has been closer to 50 or lower, which I think makes a huge difference. Again, if I was him, I don't think I'd really come back this year. I don't think it's worth it, but it would certainly, from the fan perspective, from the league perspective, it would certainly show, you know, throw a spanner in the works if that was the case, if he ended up coming back and was, you know, close to 100%.
And you also have the interesting potential of some other guys coming back who aren't necessarily Kevin Durant level contributors and aren't necessarily swing players for their teams, but could change a situation just by being fully healthy. And a couple that really stick out to me are Al Horford in Philadelphia, who played hurt most of the season, and obviously has had his worst season of his career by far. Just as a role fit, this is a guy who's never had a problem fitting anywhere and suddenly seems unplayable starting lineup in Philly. He'll have the opportunity to come back to a full reset, to a full training camp. Most of the Celtics have been hurt for stretches of the last 3 months of the season. All of those guys will now hopefully, theoretically, be fully healthy. Marcus Smart has already had the virus and killed it because he's Marcus Smart and he's terrifying and his blood's going to save us all. And they will have the great advantage of Jason Tatum basically having a full offseason after a star turn. And we know what happens when young players have a full offseason. We know the potential for improvement that could be coming from him. And the other one that really stands out to me with great potential is the Clippers, who have not clicked with both Kawhi and Paul George together at all and really haven't had to play Kawhi and Paul George together at all. They will have the chance to do a training camp fully dedicated to making those two fit together and potentially even getting one of Montreal Harrell or Lou Williams into those lineups.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into my next question, which is, first of all, I think the Clippers are somehow flying under the radar despite having Kawhi on their team. But outside of the Lakers and Bucks, who would you think coming back in any of these formats, but specifically in the tournament format, would have the best chance at winning the title?
Last two I mentioned, Clippers and Celtics. I think those are,
I would agree.
The Celtics and Clippers are the other two teams that I'm taking very seriously as championship contenders. And then there's a tier below that of teams that we all know could do it, but we need to see it. And that's where Toronto is. That's where the Nuggets are. That's where the Rockets are. That's where the Sixers are. And then there's a tier below that of teams that have high quality rosters or have had great seasons, but we really need to see a leap to expect anything from them. And that's,
yeah,
obviously Brooklyn, Dallas, Indiana, Oklahoma City, Miami, Utah.
I'd say that's specifically the Sixers, I think, because they're probably pretty close to that second tier just on talent, but they were so dysfunctional and have so many personalities that are super dysfunctional I think you're probably right to leave them off that second tier. I'm really excited, as you mentioned, to see Jason Tatum. I'm really excited to see the Celtics. I've really loved watching the Celtics play for years now, since really Jason Tatum and since Brad Stevens got there, and I think this is going to be really fun. And I think also your point, he could be a much better this first round type could really help him. And not only that, but I think the seeding implications of doing the kind of the World Cup first round completely change things, don't they? Or do they go back to are the seedings reverted back to how they were to start? Doesn't matter, because I think that's a huge difference then, right? Because in soccer, it doesn't matter if Barcelona was the number one ranked team in the in the rankings and number one seeded team, if they finish second in their group, they're going to get a harder matchup in their second round game. So the NBA, I may have just missed that in one of the articles, but I haven't really heard if, you know, say the Kings end up winning the group somehow, how, you know, do then they get an easier draw in the second round, or are they still a lower seed?
I think that's going to be crucial, and it's also going to be crucial if they reseed into conferences or just play 1-8. Presumably they'll play 1-8, because there's a lot of specific conference matches we've been looking forward to that can be erased by this, and then all of a sudden you're in a situation where you have matchups we haven't even considered because we didn't consider those teams finals contenders. But it's very easy to imagine, say, Miami and Oklahoma City making it through the group stage. What happens when those two teams play each other? We haven't even for a second considered how they match up, because they're so likely to be a team that goes out in the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, well, you can't reseed into conferences, though, right? That wouldn't work if you did this group stage.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying is, yeah. if you set it by record 1-8 rather than by AB, you could also potentially set it by conferences. Obviously, there's somewhere you could have 5-3, or you could have even 6-2. So you'd have to determine how you're going to do that. But that way, you could still claim a Western and Eastern Conference champion, which is something that you would print a banner for, something that you would print shirts for, right? So how they're going to claim that is going to be interesting, because what if, and this is next to impossible.
Well, but what if you had, what if, isn't there a pretty high chance that the Western Conference has more teams than the Eastern Conference? So how would you do that if in that case?
That's true. That's a good point, because there are four more Western Conference teams.
Yeah. Well, and the Western Conference is much better. Usually, or, you know, depth-wise, including the four added teams. I don't see a situation in which the conferences are used, should the grouping proposal be used, and that's probably beneficial, and hopefully will, you know, like a lot of these things, hopefully that they're forced into, they will be then transmitted to future, iterations of the NBA. It seems like Adam Silver's, you know, pretty excited about using those soccer type issues in tournaments and that kind of thing, from the midseason tournament to this revised playoff format. So it seems like this could have been coming anyways, but this might really jumpstart it.
I mean, Adam Silver's been pretty clear that he's excited to try changing things just for the sake of changing things all over the league.
Yeah.
He wants to take the league's current position of strength and take it to a higher position of strength.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right, well, any last thoughts on the NBA? Obviously, we're both happy because it's looking like they're not going to just cut the league off at the playoff teams, and it's looking like this group stage is pretty likely, which is obviously the best case scenario for the two teams we support. I'm excited to see what Nurkic and Collins look like in this potential situation, which obviously still has two more months to play out. So, you know, if this gets decided, they're going to have a pretty easy or clear offseason. Lillard said today that it was 1,000% possibility that both of them would be back, which makes sense. Getting to see all these players, there were a few bad injuries that were really going to harm the playoffs. So I think it's interesting to see this happening. Obviously, the big loser is probably, those playoff teams like Dallas and I guess Memphis, although I think you're right that Memphis may have fallen out. I think they were still doing really well. They had a tough schedule, but they were really well. I think it was really their injuries that would have had them fall out of the playoffs. But
I don't know. I didn't see anything from them in the regular season that impressed me the way that alternately the Pelicans, Kings, and Blazers impressed me different times of the season.
I would agree with that, but they were really good prior to their injuries, and I think assuming that they would have fallen out isn't necessarily true. I think it would have happened just because of those Clark and Jaren Jackson injuries, but now they're put in a situation where they're probably going to be, you know, stuck in a really tough group with a bunch of good teams. And obviously the Mavs, it doesn't really help no matter what situation you look at.
So speaking of Brandon Clark, just out of curiosity, where do you rank him in this rookie class? I think it's got to be third or fourth. I mean,
reorient my brain towards the rookie class. If we're saying Zion's one, Jaws two, and then
we're gonna get to five here anyway. So let's just call it. What's your all rookie class?
So it'd be those two, and then what? Who are the other ones? I can't even think right now.
So I have Thybulle third and Clark fourth.
I would put Clark ahead of Thybulle. Definitely, I would put Clark ahead of Thybulle. I didn't really understand how good Clark was until I saw him play a few times. But he completely developed a jump shot that I would have never seen coming in college, and was really hitting threes at a not a great clip, but a one that you could see really developing in the next year or two into a pretty high level three-point shooting. And then his athleticism is obviously just scary good. His positioning is really good. He's a really smart player. I like Thibault a lot, but really right now he's still pretty one-dimensional, one-level player.
Well, we know what Thibault's going to be, and we know the kind of – that's the reason that we like players like that. It's the reason that we like Mikal Bridges, and it's the reason that we like a couple guys coming up in this draft is there's such value in a great one-on-one defender who has a clean-looking three-point shot coming out of college that it almost doesn't matter if he has any other skills.
Yeah, and I think his shooting –
a product shooter that shoots 40% from three, you're going to make – $15 to $20 million with no other skill set.
Yeah, and I think his shooting deficiencies are pretty overrated, actually. I think, like you said, his shot looks fine, and it goes in more than I think most people think just based on watching him play.
Yeah, I still expect him to become a great shooter, right? It doesn't matter to me that he's not one now, and that's why I have him so high. And Brandon Clark's fantastic. Brandon Clark's athleticism is unreal. My question is, now that I'm looking at this list, who's possibly fifth? Is it RJ Barrett by default?
I can't even...
Is it Kobe White because he had a good 10-game stretch?
Yeah, I can't even think of who it would be, honestly.
I might have to pull up a
2019 NBA draft list.
Bad. Darius Garland's been bad. Jarrett Culver has been quiet, which is probably not a good sign for a starting guard. Hachimura has been all right, but he's been on the Wizards, so nobody's noticed.
Tyler Hero would be the fifth guy.
Tyler Hero, yeah, I guess Tyler Hero is... It's either Tyler Hero or it's... one of the other Heat players that are not real rookies but are considered rookies.
It has to be Tyler Hero. He's been awesome.
Yeah. Tyler Hero, by the way, is a player that is another guy who looked a lot more one-dimensional in college than he does in the pros.
Yeah.
Tyler Hero's biggest problem is that he has embraced Miami a little bit too much, and it really seems like he's leaning into hard.
I'd put Hachimura sixth, probably. Well, I'd probably put Barrett sixth, but I'd put Hachimura seventh. The Pistons guy, Dumbuya, has been pretty good, actually, as well.
Dumbuya, I have been impressed by, but only by the standards of that team, which is much lower than anything else. So the Heat roster only has... I thought two other rookies, but it only has one. Duncan Robinson is considered a second-year player. Kendrick Nunn's considered a rookie.
Yeah.
So Duncan Robinson was going to be that choice that was going to come at sixth, and Kendrick Nunn at seventh. But
DeAndre Hunter was starting to play, actually. Okay. Moving on later into the year. But yeah, I think that's all. I'll be curious to see when it seems like the June is probably the start where they're going to actually figure this out. Seems like that big meeting with all the superstars last week kind of really set things up for this as well. Hopefully we get kind of an announcement just so we know it's coming back. Time is moving faster than I thought it would anyway, so it's already almost June. I've been watching some Bundesliga, which has been fun in the mornings. The NWSL is doing a tournament, an ISO tournament, starting in June. Came out of nowhere today, which is fun for me. I think those are the only other sports that I watch, at least. I know there's been some of the car racing, right?
That's only NASCAR, not anything interesting. IndyCar comes back next week, but we'll be off for a full month after that. It's very clear that it's probably too soon for auto racing to come back, and we're lucky that there haven't been any positive cases yet, because they're not exactly taking the precautions that we hope for.
Well, not really surprising considering the demographic, but
the other sport that might be coming back and will not be, probably not for safety reasons but for union reasons, is baseball, where owners have manufactured their own lockout, which is just incredible.
Yeah, it's not great either. And then football's further in the future, but that could be delayed as well, especially the whole college system is probably a whole different podcast. No one really knows what's going to go on with that.
That's something we can't really determine until August or September.
But yeah, I think that wraps it up for now. Be exciting to see stuff happen soon in June.